Graphic Audio, a movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents J.A. Johnstone's The Loner, narrated by Ken Jackson, with performances by Eric Messner, David Jordan, Margie Tompros, Dylan Lynch, Elizabeth Jernigan, Nick DePinto, Michael Glenn, David Coyne, Michael John Casey, Danny Gavigan, Thomas Keegan, Evan Casey, Gary Tells, Terrence Aselford, Eva Wilhelm, Christopher Graybill, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. The Loner, Book 15. Bullets Don't Die. Texas was a long way behind him now, and with it, the dangers he had faced while carrying out an undercover assignment for a friend of his in the Texas Rangers. For the last few years, the man known as Kid Morgan had spent most of his time wandering the southwestern states and territories. True, he had crossed the country once during that time, going to Boston and from there all the way west to San Francisco, but at that time he had been involved in a quest that ultimately proved to be futile. He didn't like to think about that anymore. From Texas, he had drifted north, through the territory of Oklahoma and on into Kansas, veering slightly west of north and heading away from the endless plains devoted to farming in the eastern part of the state. Some good-sized ranches were out there, the kid had heard, and he was toying with the idea of becoming a cowboy.
Why not?
A few years earlier, he had decided he was going to be a gunfighter, hadn't he? Millionaire businessman Conrad Browning had disappeared, and Kid Morgan, the scourge of the plains, the pistolier from nowhere, the deadly shootist with the tragic past, had been born. The thing of it was, he did have a tragic past, and his new identity as Kid Morgan had been designed to help him gain revenge on the men responsible. He had quickly discovered it wasn't just a pose, either. From his father, the notorious gunfighter Frank Morgan, he had inherited the speed, the coordination between hand and eye, and the cool nerves under fire that allowed him to be a dangerous gunman in his own right. Kid Morgan had begun as fiction, but now he was fact. That was fine with the kid. Nothing was drawing him back to his old life as Conrad Browning. So if he wanted to be a cowboy, indeed, why not? There was, however, one distinction between the two situations. He had possessed the skills he needed to survive as a gunfighter. Other than being a good rider, he had no idea if he could handle the job of working on a ranch. There was only one way to find out. And so he rode aimlessly across the prairies of western Kansas, looking for a suitable spread where he could ask for a job. The terrain was low, rolling hills, virtually treeless except for the places where a creek twisted its way across the landscape. The banks of those creeks were often lined with small cottonwoods. The kid spotted a line of those trees in the distance during the late afternoon and pointed his buckskin toward them, leading his pack horse. He could probably push on for another hour or so, but what reason did he have to do that? The creek up ahead would provide a good place to camp, and he was going to take advantage of it. The kid didn't think the shot had been directed at him, but still gave some thought to circling wide around the spot. He wasn't looking for trouble. A pistol shot didn't always mean trouble. Somebody could have shot a snake. It was possible the person was hurt and was trying to attract attention, although three evenly spaced shots was the accepted frontier signal for a plea for help. Mostly, though, Kid Morgan wasn't the sort of hombre who rode around anything. He hitched the buckskin into motion again and headed for the creek. If trouble was waiting for him, he was well armed to meet it. A holstered Colt 45 rode on his hip, and in his right-hand saddlebag, within easy reach, was a semi-automatic Mauser C96 pistol, fully loaded with a 10-round clip. He had carried the German-made weapon for a while, but recently switched back to the old reliable Colt. The broom handle Mauser made a mighty fine second gun, though. In addition, the butt of a Winchester Model 1894 carbine in .30-30 caliber stuck up from a saddle boot on the left side of the horse. The kid had an old Sharps Buffalo rifle strapped to his pack horse for long-distance shooting. And if there was close work that needed to be done, a razor-sharp Bowie knife was sheathed on his left hip. Some people might have said he was armed for bear, but the kid wasn't really worried about bears, especially on the Kansas prairie. Men, on the other hand. As he drew closer to the creek, he was able to see several figures moving around on the near bank. A couple of men moved to the edge of the trees and watched him approach. He lifted a hand in greeting and to show he was peaceful. He counted four men, but only three mounts were visible. That didn't bode well, especially considering the single shot he'd heard. The kid reined to a halt about 20 feet from the two men keeping an eye on him. One was painfully skinny, dressed in a threadbare town suit, a collarless shirt with no tie, and a battered old derby. The other was shorter and stockier, with a close-cropped dark beard peppered with silver.
Howdy, mister.
Are you fellas planning on camping here? Because I don't want to intrude.
No, we just stopped to water our horses and let them rest for a spell. Too bad, though. A poor Jeff's horse couldn't make it. Poor critter was plumb worn out. Jeff had to shoot it. It was hard on him, too. He'd had that horse for a long time.
The kid could see the dark shape of the dead horse on the ground beside the man.
Sorry.
The three horses, still standing, were covered with drying sweat lather. Their heads hung low and their sides were heaving. They hadn't been there long. Men didn't come so close to killing their horses by running them into the ground unless they were in an awful big hurry. And men in that big a hurry usually had trouble hard on their heels. The kid kept his face expressionless and didn't let on that he understood that. Maybe he could still ride away without any gunplay, but he doubted it. He lifted the buckskin's reins with his left hand.
I guess I'll be moving along. Hope your luck takes a turn for the better.
Oh, I reckon it already did.
The stocky man tried to look like he wasn't doing anything, but his hand moved closer to the gun on his hip.
Our luck changed when you came along, mister. You got two good horses there. One to replace Jess, and one for a spare for the rest of us.
Yeah, but they're my horses.
The stocky man dropped the act. Both of the men in front of him slapped leather. The kid took care of the problem right in front of him first. The buckskin was accustomed to the roar of shots, but even so, the horse moved a short distance to the left. The kid took advantage of that, lining himself up for a better shot at the derby-wearing gent. Dealing with the other two was going to be trickier. They had gone in opposite directions and had the cottonwoods to use as cover. He had to choose, so he swung his Colt to the right. The kid recovered enough to roll toward the trees. The slender trunks of the cottonwoods wouldn't provide much cover, but they were better than nothing. The kid's Colt was still in his hand. Instinct had made him hang on to it. So he thrust the revolver around the cottonwood, aimed toward the man on his right, who was also using the trees for cover. He couldn't see the man on his left anymore, the one who had shot him, and that worried him. Some men who lived by the gun preached the philosophy that you had to believe you were invincible, that there was no gunfight you wouldn't win, no bullet that could kill you. The kid's somewhat fatalistic nature, which dated back to before he had taken up the gun himself, made it impossible for him to adopt that attitude. Still, he was surprised he'd been wounded. The men had the look of low-level hard cases, the sort who robbed general stores instead of holding up banks and trains, and he had figured his speed and accuracy would be enough to take care of all of them. Clearly, he had underestimated at least one of them. The kid lined up another shot towards the man on the right. As the kid ducked his head, he tried to take stock of how badly he was hurt. The upper left part of his chest, as well as the shoulder and arm on that side of his body, were numb. It wasn't uncommon when a bullet first struck, but the wound should be starting to hurt. He laid the Colt on the ground and reached over to explore the injury. He expected to feel the warm, wet stickiness of fresh blood, but all he found was a ragged rip in his shirt. Underneath it was the round, waterproof metal container he used to carry matches. A grim smile tugged at the corners of the kid's mouth. The bullet had come in at a very shallow angle, struck the metal cylinder, and glanced off rather than penetrating. The impact had been enough to knock him out of the saddle and make his arm and shoulder go numb. A couple of inches either way, and he would probably be dead. The kid had long since learned to accept the utter capriciousness of fate. He also knew enough not to turn down good luck whenever he got it. The kid kept glancing back and forth, hoping to catch a glimpse of his enemy working his way around to a better angle. The creek twisted in his direction, making it easy for the man to slip along the stream using the bank as cover until he was practically behind. The kid's thoughts stopped abruptly as the realization made him roll in that direction just as the man stood up from behind the creek bank and pointed a rifle at him. The kid brought his Colt around to try for a shot of his own, but knew he was probably too late. He might as well be a target in a shooting gallery.
Hey!
The unexpected shout made the rifleman hesitate. He turned his head to look to his right. As the rifleman collapsed, dropping out of sight, footsteps warned the kid the last gunman was charging him, trying to take advantage of the fact that the kid had turned his back for a moment. The kid twisted around again. The kid climbed to his feet and leaned against the tree that had shielded him. Neither of the first two men he'd shot had moved since they fell, but that didn't mean for sure they were dead. As long as that uncertainty existed, he continued to regard them as potential threats. The feeling was starting to return to his left arm and shoulder, and he was able to hold the revolver in his left hand. Using his right to thumb fresh cartridges into the cylinder, the kid quickly reloaded the empty Colt as he kept his eyes on the first two men on the ground. He was also very curious about the identity of whoever had called out and then shot the rifleman. That man had saved his life, but who he was or why he had taken a hand in the fight was unknown. He snapped the Colt closed and walked over to the stocky man and the one in the derby. The stocky man had fallen on his back with his arms flung out limply at his sides. He stared sightlessly at the sky with eyes glassy in death. The derby wearer was lying on his stomach. The kid could see marks on the ground where the man's fingers had clawed against it in death spasms. Just to make sure, he kept the man covered, hooked a boot toe under his shoulder, and rolled him onto his back. His eyes were as glassy as those of his companion. A man emerged from the trees farther along the creek and walked toward the kid, leading a saddle horse with his left hand and carrying a Winchester in his right. The kid didn't holster his gun, despite the fact the stranger had helped him. It took more than that to earn his trust. He watched alertly, studying the man as he approached. He moved along in a fairly spry fashion, but the man was getting on in years. Judging by the gray in his hair and the lines etched in his face, he had to be 60, maybe even older. A mustache drooped over his mouth. He wore a gray Stetson and had a gray vest over his white shirt. The kid straightened a little as he saw the badge pinned to the stranger's vest.
Are you hurt, son?
No, sir, I'm fine. The bullet glanced off the tin where I keep my matches and knocked me out of the saddle, but that's all.
Well, that was mighty good luck, wasn't it? I've always said that a fast, steady hand and cool nerves are fine, but there's no substitute for pure old-fashioned good luck.
I can't argue with that, Marshal. Or is it Sheriff?
No, you were right the first time. It's Marshal. Marshal Jared Tate from Copperhead Springs.
The name of the town was vaguely familiar to the kid. He recalled seeing it on a map of Kansas pinned to the wall of an eatery in Dodge City. He'd examined it briefly while he was having his meal. Other than that, he'd never heard of the place. As he remembered the map, Copperhead Springs was a good distance west of where he was.
I certainly appreciate the help, Marshal, but I'm curious. If you're a town marshal, what are you doing out here this far from your bailiwick?
Oh, I'm on my way back there, don't worry. I've been over to Fort Hays delivering a prisoner to the army, picked up a particularly vicious deserter called Brick Cantrell, and they were mighty glad to get him back. No offense, son, but you know who I am and what I'm doing here, and I don't know a thing about you except that I killed a man to save your life.
Sorry, Marshal. I should have introduced myself. My name's Morgan. Some people call me Kid Morgan.
If the name meant anything to Marshal Jared Tate, he gave no sign of it. He just nodded.
Pleasure to meet you, Mr. Morgan. Now that we've been properly introduced, you mind telling me why those hombres were trying to kill you?
They wanted to steal my horses. They'd already ridden one of their mounts to death, and the others weren't far from it.
They must have been in a mighty big hurry. Any idea why?
No, but if I had to guess, I'd say they were on the run from the law.
I agree with you. When I heard all that shooting, I figured I ought to take a look. Careful-like, you understand, because I didn't know what I'd be getting into. So I slipped along the creek for a ways. When I saw the odds were 2-1 and those two were telling my lawmen's instincts that they were no good, I knew I needed to give you a hand. The way that fellow with the rifle tried to bushwhack you just confirmed it.
That was a good shot you made.
My eyes may be getting old, but they're still pretty sharp. Whereabouts you headed, Mr. Morgan?
No place in particular. I thought I might see if I could find a riding job on one of the ranches in this end of the state.
Well, why don't you come along to Copperhead Springs with me? I know just about everybody who has a spread around there. I'm sure it wouldn't be hard to find one who needs a good hand.
All right. I appreciate that, Marshal. I was planning to make camp along this creek tonight, if you'd care to share my coffee and bacon and beans.
Well, that sounds like a good idea to me. We might want to move a little farther upstream before we settle down for the night, though. I never cared much for sharing a campground with dead folks.
The kid might have been tempted to leave the dead hard cases where they had fallen. There were enough coyotes and other scavengers around to take care of them. But Marshal Tate seemed to assume they were going to bury the men. The kid didn't want to argue with the man who had saved his life, so he broke out his shovel and did the digging. He put the four men in a single grave, and by the time he finished filling in the hole in the ground, night was falling.
Don't worry. I can still find us a good campsite, even in the dark. I've been all over this part of the country for years, know it like the back of my own hand.
The kid was leading one of the extra horses, along with his pack animal. The marshal led the other two horses.
Have you been a lawman in other towns besides Copperhead Springs?
Oh, Lord, yes. A dozen or more. I was one of Hickok's deputies in Abilene, you know.
Wild Bill himself?
That's right. I never really thought he was all that wild, except when circumstances forced him to be. Most of the time, he seemed like a fine gentleman. It nearly broke my heart when I heard he'd been shot from behind by that coward up in Deadwood. If Bill had been facing the door, Jack McCall never would have got that close to him with a gun.
After a couple of decades of estrangement, the kid and his father had grown closer over the past few years. He had heard quite a few stories from Frank Morgan about the old days of the Wild West. He was interested to hear what else Jared Tate had to say.
Where else did you serve as a peace officer?
I was a Ford County deputy when Jim Masterson was the sheriff. Served alongside him and his brother Bat.
Really? I know Bat Masterson.
Is that so? Well, it just goes to show you it's true what they say about how the West is really a small place despite all those wide open spaces. Bat's a fine man.
He is.
Dodge City's where I met the Earps, too. I wound up heading out to Arizona Territory some years back and spent some time in Tombstone while they were there. Fine bunch of boys, mind you, but headstrong, I guess you could say. You didn't want to get on the wrong side of them.
I've heard Wyatt Earp has gone up to Alaska to cash in on that gold rush.
What gold rush?
They found gold along some river up there called the Yukon. It caused a rush just like the one to California back in 49. You haven't heard about it?
Yeah. Life's pretty slow in Copperhead Springs. And I've never been all that good about keeping up with the news. To me, a newspaper's got its uses, but most of them involve the outhouse.
As they rode on, Tate continued reminiscing about various places he had worn a star, most of them small towns in Kansas and Nebraska.
I like this part of the country, you know. From time to time, I might go someplace like Tombstone just to see something new, but I always come back to these parts. It seems to me this is the heart of the country, and not just because it's in the middle. It's the beating heart, where the things that make this America are most honest and true.
The kid supposed most people thought that was the case about where they lived, if they thought about such things at all. But he didn't say it to Marshal Tate. He just smiled and nodded. A short time later, they came to a spot along the creek perfect for camping, with an open space in the trees, level ground, plenty of grass for the horses, and an easy slope down to the stream. They picketed and unsaddled the horses. Then the kid gathered some wood to build a fire. There were enough broken cottonwood branches around to make it unnecessary to collect the dried buffalo chips usually needed to build a fire on the prairie.
Let me boil the coffee. You shouldn't have to use all your supplies.
All right. I'll fry up some bacon and heat the beans I got left over from last night.
Tate got a small coffee pot from the pack lashed behind his saddle. He carried it down to the stream to fill it with water. The kid noticed a couple of minutes later that Tate hadn't come back. He lifted his gaze from the thick strips of bacon beginning to sizzle in his frying pan and looked toward the creek. The glow from the fire reached that far, and the kid could see Tate standing beside the stream, the coffee pot still in his hand hanging at his side.
Marshal, something wrong?
Tate gave a little shake of his head, not like he was answering the kid's question, but more in the manner of a man waking up. He looked back over his shoulder.
What?
Is anything wrong? You were going to get water for the coffee.
The coffee? Good Lord. The night's so plumb beautiful, I reckon I just got caught up in it and forgot what I was doing. Thanks for the reminder, Mr. Morgan.
You can call me Kid, Marshal. Most folks do.
Tate knelt to fill the pot.
Yeah, seems a mite disrespectful. calling a grown man kid. Doesn't it bother you?
Not really. I've always figured Mr. Morgan was my father, not me.
Your father's still living, is he?
Oh, yeah. At least as far as I know. We don't see each other all that often.
There's not trouble between you, is there?
No, not at all. At one time there was, but in the last few years, well, we've become good friends. We're just both too fiddle-footed to get together very often.
I'm glad to hear it. You should enjoy all the time you do get to spend with him. It'll seem all too soon that he's gone.
The kid shook his head. Frank Morgan was such a larger-than-life figure, it was impossible to imagine him not being around. Logically, of course, the kid knew that was inevitable. But he couldn't believe it in his heart. He continued fixing the meal, and realized something several minutes later as he glanced at the coffee pot sitting at the edge of the fire.
Marshall, you didn't put the coffee in the pot, did you?
What? Why, sure, I... Oh, that doesn't smell like coffee to me. Come to think of it, I don't believe I did. I'm feeling a little absent-minded tonight, kid. Probably has something to do with shooting that man. To tell you the truth, it's been a while since I had to kill a man, and it's never something that sets easy on me.
I understand.
Tate got a sack of Arbuckles from his gear and poured grounds into the pot. Soon the smell of the strong black brew filled the air, mingling well with the aroma of bacon. The food was good, and the kid ate his fill, washing it down with the Marshal's excellent coffee. When they were finished, since there was a creek handy, he washed out the coffee pot, the skillet, and the pot he used to heat the beans, which they had polished off. He put everything away, then sat down on the bedroll he had spread next to the fire.
I tell you, kid, living in town is all right, but I like getting out here away from everybody sometimes. That's probably why I said I'd take Cantrell to Fort Hayes and deliver him to the Army. I knew to give me a chance for a nice leisurely ride back to Copperhead Springs with a few nights on the trail.
And then I came along and intruded on your privacy by nearly getting myself killed.
Oh, no, I'm not worried about that. A cheerful traveling companion is always welcome, as long as he's not the sort who jabbers all the time. And I can already tell you're not that sort. You know how to be quiet and leave a man with his thoughts. That's because you're a man with a lot of thoughts of your own.
The kid's instincts picked the sound out from all the other sounds belonging around a trail camp. Somebody was out there, and without having to think about it, the kid moved his hand toward his gun.
Hold it! You better freeze, mister. You're covered. And if you pull that gun, I'll ventilate you.
The kid stopped before his fingers closed around the butt of the Colt. It wasn't easy to do so. His first impulse was to pull the gun and roll fast to the side to throw off the aim of whoever was threatening him. But Marshal Tate was sitting on the other side of the fire, rather flat-footed, clearly not prepared for trouble. If bullets started flying, the old lawman might not survive.
Take it easy, mister. There's no need for gunplay here.
I'll be the judge of that. Who are you?
I could ask the same of you.
Yeah, but I'm the one holding the rifle aimed dead straight at your brisket. Now answer the question.
My name's Morgan. My friend is a lawman, in case you missed the star on his vest. His name's Tate.
Yeah, I see the badge now. All right to come into the camp?
Just don't come in shooting.
The man stepped into the light, holding a Spencer repeating rifle of the type carried by the U.S. Cavalry. His faded blue trousers with remnants of yellow stripes down the legs appeared to be Army issue, as was the gray hat with the turned-up brim he wore. His shirt was buckskin, though, and his high-topped boots were fashioned moccasin style rather than military. He was about the same age as Marshal Tate, with a weathered face and considerable gray in his brown hair and mustache. He wore a badge, too, pinned to his buckskin shirt. He pointed the rifle at the ground.
Sorry about the misunderstanding. I thought you might be a couple of the hombres I've been trailing. I can see now that you're not. Maybe you've seen them, though?
Four men, a short, stocky, bearded fella, a tall, skinny one in an old derby hat, redhead, and a man with a scar down his left cheek that looked like he got it in a knife fight.
The newcomer's eyes narrowed as he listened to those descriptions. He shifted the Spencer slightly, as if he were tempted to raise it and pointed at him again.
You've seen them, all right. And up close, too. They happen to be friends of yours?
Not hardly. We killed them a while ago.
They're buried a few miles downstream.
I reckon you better tell me about it.
Well, I don't see why we should. That's a town marshal's badge you're wearing, just like mine. And since I don't see any town around here, you're out of your jurisdiction.
So are you. But that didn't stop you from killing those hombres.
They didn't give us much choice about it.
Listen, Why don't you two introduce yourselves, and then you can both share what you know about the situation.
That's all right with me, I suppose.
Me too. I'm Marshal Jared Tate.
I'm Marshal Bob Porter. I'm from a town called Chalk Butte, about 30 miles east of here.
The kid had heard of Chalk Butte, but hadn't passed through there while he drifted west.
Well, I know Chalk Butte well, although it's been quite a while since I was there. I'm from Copperhead Springs.
Copperhead Springs? But I thought... Never mind. I want to hear about your run-in with those varmints. I have to say I'm a mite surprised you're still alive. They are, or rather they were, if you're telling me the truth, a vicious bunch.
I don't doubt that for a second. They tried to steal my horses because they'd ridden one of theirs to death and the others were almost that far gone. I objected to having my horses stolen. Marshal Tate happened to come along and give me a hand with my objections.
So you shot it out with those men, and they're dead and you're not?
We brought along the three horses that were still alive. If you know the mounts you've been chasing, maybe you'd recognize them.
Well, I might.
Porter walked over to look at the horses. The kid and Tate went with him. After studying the horses in the firelight for a moment, Porter turned to them and nodded.
Sure looks like the animals they rode out of Chalk Butte on. I reckon you're probably telling the truth.
We can show you the grave and you can dig them up if you want.
No, I don't think that'll be necessary. Did you happen to look in the saddlebags you took off those horses?
Haven't gotten around to it yet. They're piled over there on the ground. If there's stolen bank money or something like that, you'll find it there.
What makes you think they had loot with them?
You chased them this far, and pretty hard and fast, too. Judging by how worn out the horses were, you must have had a pretty good reason for that.
I do, but it's not money. Those men abused and murdered a young woman. A friend of my daughter's, in fact. I would have trailed him pretty much all the way to hell if I had to. If they hadn't run into you two first.
Good Lord. That's awful. I didn't feel bad about killing them to start with because I knew they had to be owl hoots of some sort. But now I wish we'd made them suffer more.
Well, at least they're dead. It won't bring that poor girl back. But it's about as close to justice as we'll find in this world.
There might still be a little coffee in the pot, Marshal. You're welcome to join us if you want.
Well, I'm obliged for the invitation. I'll take you up on it. When I saw your fire, I left my horse about a half mile downstream. I'll fetch him and be back shortly.
We don't have any supper left, but I can fry up some bacon while you're gone.
Oh, no need, but again, I'm obliged. I've still got plenty of jerky and biscuits I brought with me. I knew it might be a long chase.
Porter started down the creek while the kid and Tate returned to the fire.
What do you think? Is he telling the truth about everything?
I believe so. I was pretty suspicious at first because I thought I knew all the lawmen in these parts and I'd never heard of him. The last I'd heard, a fella named Griggs was the marshal in Chalk Butte. But like I told Porter, that's been a few years. They could have changed marshals over there more than once in that time.
He seems genuine enough to me, too.
I'm gonna keep an eye on him anyway. It never hurts to be careful.
Porter returned about a quarter hour later, leading a saddled horse. He unsaddled the animal and picketed it with the others.
We boiled some more coffee, so you won't have to drink the dregs.
Mighty hospitable of you.
Porter brought out his own cup, filled it from the pot, and settled down to make a late supper of jerky and biscuits he took from his supplies.
Reason I asked about those saddlebags is those men stole some jewelry from the girl they attacked. I'd like to be able to take it back to her family. It won't help much. Hell, it won't help any, I expect. But at least losing it won't make matters even worse.
It should still be there.
I'm a little curious about something, Marshal.
What's that?
Did you bring a posse with you?
No, this was a chore I wanted to handle myself. Like I said, the girl was a friend of the family.
So those four hard cases were running away like the devil himself was after them when it was only one man?
I guess they didn't know I was by myself. Either that or they figured I was mad enough they didn't want me catching up to them, alone or not. Let's face it. After what they'd done, they'd had to know there was no place they could hide. If they were ever caught, they'd be strung up. Even most other outlaws would have gunned them down like the hydrophobia skunks they were.
Yeah, that's true, I reckon.
I've been thinking. I remember hearing a lot about a man named Morgan, a gunfighter. Just the sort of man who wouldn't think twice about throwing down on those bad men, even with 4-1 odds. But you seem mighty young to be him.
You're talking about Frank Morgan.
That's it. That's the name, all right.
I'm not him.
This is Kid Morgan.
Are you a gunfighter too, Kid?
There are no wanted posters out on me, if that's what you're asking, Marshal.
Well, you can't blame an old lawman's instincts for kicking in.
Porter took another drink of the coffee and nodded in satisfaction.
So, we'll share this camp tonight and then go our separate ways in the morning? I'm anxious to get back home, and I expect you are too, Marshal.
That's right.
Copperhead Springs. Maybe I'll get over that way again one of these days.
You'll be welcome. Copperhead Springs is a nice, friendly place.
After a shared breakfast in the morning, the men saddled up and got ready to ride.
Do you want those three horses that belong to the men you were chasing? We don't really need them.
No, I reckon they're rightfully yours now. I got that jewelry I came after, and the only other thing I wanted was to see those scum brought to justice. You and the kid here took care of that.
Well, I'm glad we could help out, even though we didn't know at the time what they'd done.
Porter swung into the saddle and lifted a hand in farewell as he turned his horse. The kid and Tate stood for a moment, watching him ride off to the east, before they mounted up as well.
It strikes me the Marshal is a pretty good hombre, and my years carrying a badge have given me a pretty good instinct for such things.
I think you're right. He seemed friendly enough, but if I was a lawbreaker, I don't think I'd want him hunting me. So, Marshal Tate, you know how Copperhead Springs got its name?
As a matter of fact, I do. This is before I ever came to these parts, of course, but back when the wagon trains were coming through here, one group of immigrants decided to stop and settle at some springs they came to. A good supply of water is one of the most important things a town can have, and these springs look like they've been there for a long time and were in no danger of going dry. So the people figured they'd build a town around the springs. They hadn't been there long, though, before they realized that the place was crawling, and I do mean crawling, with copperhead snakes. Several folks got bitten, and a couple even died. So, the immigrants were faced with another decision. They could leave that perfect spot for a settlement, or they could stay and try to wipe out the snakes. They decided to stay and fight.
I'm guessing they eventually got rid of the snakes?
It took a long time, but the old-timers tell me nobody has seen a copperhead around there for more than 20 years. I know I've never seen one since I went there to be marshal. Other kinds of snakes every now and then, but no copperheads, which is fine with me, because I don't care for snakes, period.
No, I don't either. I spent some time once in a place called Rattlesnake Valley.
Now that is somewhere I would not like to go.
It's not quite as bad as it sounds, especially now that all the two-legged reptiles are cleaned out.
You had something to do with that, I'm betting.
A little.
They camped that night after an uneventful day.
We ought to make the town by tomorrow evening. I'll be glad to get back.
Do you have a deputy you left to take care of things while you were gone?
Oh, sure. Deputy... Well, if that don't beat all. I've had so many deputies, they're getting all mixed up in my head. And this boy's almost like a son to me.
Well, it doesn't really matter. I'll be meeting him soon enough when we get there.
I hope you'll stay around town for a while and take advantage of our hospitality. Copperhead Springs is one of the friendliest towns you'll ever find.
Now, I'm sure I'll be around if you can help me get a job on one of the ranches in the area.
You're looking for a riding job?
Yeah, I told you yesterday.
Oh, well, I slept since then, haven't I?
I guess we both have.
They slept well that night and were on the trail again early the next morning. Tate brought up the cowboying job the kid hoped to get.
Since you mentioned it last night, I've been doing some thinking about it, and I think the place to start would be Cy Levesey's Broken Spoke Ranch. It's the biggest spread in the area, and Cy's a good friend of mine.
I appreciate that.
Of course. If Cy really doesn't need any hands right now, I'm sure he'd take you on anyway as a favor to me. But I wouldn't ask him to do that.
No, I wouldn't want you to.
There are plenty of other outfits around that might take you on. You won't be without work long, I can guarantee that. After seeing the way you can shoot, maybe I ought to hire you on as my deputy. I could use a good man to take over when I'm gone.
I thought you already had a deputy.
What? Me? No. I've been keeping the peace alone in Cottonwood Springs for years now.
Copperhead Springs.
What about it?
You said Cottonwood Springs instead of Copperhead Springs.
No, I don't think I did.
I'm pretty sure you just did.
Well, maybe you heard me wrong. Copperhead, Cottonwood, they're sort of similar sounding. That's all it was. I should know what the town's called since we were talking about Cy Levesey a few minutes ago, and Cy's one of the old-timers in those parts. He told me the story about how a wagon train full of immigrants on their way west came to the springs and decided to stop there. The town needs a good supply of water, you see, and those springs were good and strong and looked like they'd been there for a long time. They weren't likely to dry up anytime soon. But it wasn't long after those folks decided to settle that they discovered the place was crawling, and I mean crawling, with copperheads. Mean, nasty snakes those are, too, let me tell you. They bit some of the settlers, and a few of those poor people died. So they were faced with a choice of moving on and leaving those springs behind, or staying and trying to get rid of the snakes. Because other than that, the place was perfect for a town. What do you think they did?
They decided to stay and wipe out the snakes?
That's exactly what they did. It took a while, mind you, years, in fact, before they got rid of all those scaly little devils. But folks who have been around there for a long time, like Cy Levesey, tell me it's been 20 years or more since anybody saw a copperhead around.
Maybe they should change the name of the town to No Copperhead Springs.
Well, that's a good one. It surely is. I'll have to tell Cy what you said, Mr.
Just call me Kid.
Sure, Kid. Anyway, I'll tell Cy. That's a good one.
The kid turned his head and stared off into the distance. He didn't want Tate to see the bleak look he knew was in his eyes. In the roughly day and a half he had known the marshal, he had noticed several times that Tate seemed to be a mite absent-minded. At first, the kid hadn't thought anything about it. Everybody could be forgetful at times. Even someone as young and healthy as he was had things slip his mind. But Tate seemed more muddled than he had been the day before, from not being able to remember his deputy's name, if he even had a deputy, to forgetting the name of the town where he lived, to telling the kid the same story about the origin of the town's name as if he had no memory of spinning the same yarn the night before. It was troubling to think a man could forget so much. If he couldn't remember such basic things, how could anyone know if anything he'd said had been true? The kid glanced over at his companion, specifically at the badge pinned to Tate's vest. How could he be sure Tate was really a lawman? The badge might be real, but did Tate really have the right to wear it? And if he did, what sort of town would hire a man with obvious mental problems to keep the peace? The kid didn't know, but he suspected he would find out. He knew Copperhead Springs existed because he had seen it on that map, which was a recent one, as he recalled. For the same reason, he knew they were headed in the right direction to reach the settlement. The best thing to do, he decided, was to keep riding along with Tate and see what happened when they got there. One thing he knew was that he couldn't ride off and leave the man alone out on the prairie. The shape he was in, there was no telling what might happen to him. Although Tate had been plenty capable when it came to gunplay, the kid reminded himself, he had drilled that outlaw and saved the kid's life. Obviously, there were some things Tate hadn't forgotten. Late that afternoon, they topped a ridge, and the kid was able to look down into a green valley watered by a narrow, meandering stream flowing from a large pool on the far side of the valley. Sunlight reflected brilliantly from the surface of the pool, which was no doubt fed by those springs. Between stomping snakes, those early settlers must have figured out a way to trap some of the flow from the springs to form the pool. The settlement itself lay just to the south of the springs. To the north was a beautiful park-like area. The town was good-sized, consisting of four main streets running parallel to each other for half a dozen blocks, with the corresponding cross streets. The kid saw a couple of church steeples, a large brick building at the edge of town that was probably the school, and some substantial-looking businesses in the downtown area. A nice place to live, Tate had claimed, and the kid could believe that, at least judging by what he saw as the two of them approached. Peaceful, Tate had called it.
Trouble! And in my town, I'll put a stop to that.
The kid dropped the reins of the pack horse and the extra saddle mount, then sent the buckskin galloping after Tate. The trail turned into the main street of Copperhead Springs. The shots were coming from the center of town. Tate reined in about 50 feet in front of the kid and swung down smoothly from the saddle, his feet hitting the ground before his horse ever stopped moving. The marshal might have trouble remembering some things, but he was still mighty spry for his age. He had come to a halt in front of the Trailblazer Saloon, which appeared to be a large, successful establishment. By the time the kid reined in and dismounted, Tate had bounded up the steps to the boardwalk. Gun in hand, he started toward the saloon's batwing entrance. The shots had stopped for the time being, but they might start again without any warning, especially if Tate charged in there blindly with his gun drawn.
Marshal, maybe you'd better...
A man came flying through one of the saloon's front windows. He landed on the boardwalk, rolled under the railing, and dropped off the edge. Tate had paused with his left hand on one side of the bat wings, ready to thrust it open. He turned his head to stare in surprise at the man crashing through the window. Before the marshal could start inside again, a big man bulled his way through the doorway, slapping the bat wings aside. The swinging doors smacked into Tate.
You better watch where you're going, Grandpa.
No, you're the one who'd better watch out, mister.
The man glared murderously as he swung his head around to look at the kid. He was huge, with slab-muscled shoulders, seemingly as broad as an ox yoke, long gorilla-like arms, and a big gut that looked soft but probably wasn't. Black stubble covered his cheeks, and his hat was pushed back on a thatch of equally coarse black hair.
What'd you say, mister?
I said you should watch where you're going. That man you just knocked down is the marshal of Copperhead Springs.
What, that old fool? I show you who's an old fool, you big lummox.
The big man's face went from being arrogant and mildly amused to cold, vicious, and ruthless in an instant. He drew back a leg that seemed as big as a tree trunk, and the kid knew he was about to kick Tate before the old lawman could reach the fallen gun. In a blur of speed, the kid palmed out his Colt and pointed it at the big man.
Don't do it. I'll put a bullet in you before I let you hurt that man.
You don't know what you're doing.
I'm helping a friend. Marshal, can you get up?
Of course I can get up.
He snatched his gun from the boardwalk and scrambled to his feet.
I'm not hurt. I just tripped and lost my balance.
That's good. Maybe you'd better go check on that fellow who got thrown through the window.
Tate went down the steps and hurried over to the man who still lay huddled in the street next to the boardwalk. He knelt beside the still figure and rolled it over.
This man's dead, kid. He's been shot 3 times.
Self-defense. You can ask anybody in the saloon, they'll tell you.
The kid had a hunch the people in the saloon would say whatever they thought this monster wanted them to say. A number of pale, worried faces were looking through the windows, intently watching the tense confrontation on the boardwalk, but taking no part in it. Tate came back over to the steps.
I'll ask the people in the saloon, all right. Hell, I'll ask anybody who'll talk to me, and I'll get to the bottom of this. I can promise you that much, mister. But I'll do it after I've locked you up.
What are you talking about? You can't lock me up.
We'll see about that. What's your name?
You don't know who I am.
If I knew, I wouldn't be asking, now would I? Tell me your name, blasted.
I'm Jed Ahern, ramrod out of the Broken Spoke, you old fool.
Keep a civil tongue in your head. You're already looking at a possible murder charge.
It was self-defense, I tell you.
And it won't do you any good to lie about where you work. Ed McAfee's the foreman at the Broken Spoke. Known him for years.
Ed who?
Marshal, we can hash this out later. Maybe we'd better get this fella locked up.
That's a good idea.
Which way's the jail?
Why, it's right down to...
Tate began to look around in confusion. The kid had suspected as much. The marshal's office in jail was probably somewhere along Main Street. The town wasn't so big they couldn't find it. He had a feeling it wasn't Tate's office anymore, though. Which left the question of where the actual marshal of Copperhead Springs might be.
Come on.
The big man shook his head and stayed where he was, his legs planted firmly on the boardwalk like the tree trunks they resembled.
You're loco! I'm not going anywhere with you! You don't have any right to arrest me! You're the ones breaking the law, not me!
You see that badge on the marshal's vest?
I see a hunk of tin, it don't mean nothing to me. He ain't the marshal here, so he's got no right to arrest me.
Now I know you need to be locked up saying I'm not the marshal. You're not in your right mind. Now, are you coming along peacefully, or do I have to buffalo you and drag you?
Somebody was in a mighty big hurry. Tate turned his head to look. With speed shocking in such a massive, ape-like figure, Ahern made a move, leaping toward Tate. The kid couldn't risk a shot. Ahern and the old lawman were too close together. Ahern's hands clamped down on Tate's shoulders. Whirling, he literally threw Tate at the kid. Ahern leaped at the kid, clearly intending to stomp him to death. With Doom literally looming above him, the kid moved fast, throwing himself to the side and flinging his hands up to grab Ahern's boot. The kid rolled onto hands and knees and quickly pushed himself to his feet.
I'm gonna kill you!
With nimble speed that was so surprising, he charged the kid, throwing a looping right. The kid stepped in close to hook a left and a right into the big target that was Ahern's belly. Using the same arm he had missed with, Ahern brought it sweeping back around. Before the kid could catch his balance, Ahern was on him again. The kid was in a bear hug. It was just about the worst thing that could happen. The kid's speed and quickness were the only advantages he had, and those didn't amount to much against Ahern. He was so much quicker than the kid had expected. Jerking his head back, the kid quickly drove it forward, lowering it so the crown of his forehead slammed into Ahern's nose. The big man came barreling at the kid like a runaway train. The kid waited until the last possible second to move, then threw himself aside. Ahern plowed into the saloon wall at full speed.